Hello and welcome. This is Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and we're here for the Reproductive Hormone Evaluation module. And I'm excited to bring this to you because there is a wealth of information on understanding hormones. It's way beyond what most medical doctors do, which is run a blood test. And they run a blood test for estradiol or estrone. I think it's usually estradiol only, testosterone, DHEA, and progesterone. And then they decide what's going on with you. You can't do it that way, folks. It's not that easy. It's not that simplistic. What you really want to do is see the hormones and their metabolites and the intermediary products and the end products. And you want to assess ratios. You don't just look at this is high, this is not, and everything's okay. We'll just supplement with this and give you a prescription. You can't do it that way. You can't do it that way. So we're going to go through with you. I'm going to have you understand a little bit about the background of the estrogen and progesterone and testosterone metabolism so you get an understanding. And then we're going to go into, well, how do you look at this? How do you look at it on labs? Again, the information here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, nor when you do this, if you're going to go in, somebody's working with a doctor, you know, obviously they're going to have to get any prescriptions or bioidenticals done through their doctor. If they're on bioidenticals and they're looking to you to help them get off, you have to make sure that they know that they need to work with their doctor, and you can't tell them, okay, now you can decrease this prescription. It's not legal unless, like Debbie, you're an MD. And then you can. You can put them on, you can take them off. But if you're not an MD and you haven't prescribed the medication, you can't tell them to go off of it, but you can give them ways to support themselves and ways to assess themselves. And these tests are readily available. That's what's really cool. So I'll tell you about that in a moment. So just to review the major glands, you've got your hypothalamus in the pituitary up in your brain, and then you've got your thyroid, you've got the thymus, you've got your adrenals, and then you've got your ovaries and testes. The ones that are important that tie in to the functioning of the male and female reproductive system, the hormones that we're looking at, and these are the hypothalamus and the pituitary, the thyroid, the ovaries and the testes, and the adrenals. So the only ones on here that don't directly relate to this is the parathyroid, the thymus, and the pineal. Yeah, it might, because there's effects, there's interactions between melatonin and your sex hormones. So it's just this intricate system. It's this intricate family of hormones that you need to be aware of, and you need to understand how they work, the interactions, so you can help understand how to assess. So the major female-male hormones, the male hormones are also called androgens. We don't have a technical fancy word for the female ones that I know about. The female side, we have estrogen, progesterone. But that's where it begins, guys. There's so much more to it. And I'll show you some flowcharts so you understand it. And then we'll look at some testing and see that the wealth of information that goes beyond just estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA is what gives you some amazing insights into what's going on with that person. So the hypothalamus and the pituitary are the master controllers. The hypothalamus controls the pituitary, and then the pituitary sends hormone regulators out to the rest of the body. So we're going to look quickly at what those are. So in the hypothalamus, which is up in the right in the middle circle around the hypothalamus is there. And the pituitary, I'll just put an arrow towards the pituitary, is there, right? It says pituitary. And they're in constant communication with each other. So the hypothalamus releases these tropin-releasing hormones. So thyrotropin-releasing hormone, TRH, is for thyroid. So that tells the pituitary that it needs more TSH. Gonadotropin, that tells the pituitary that we're needing to do something with FSH and LH. And I'll tell you what those are in a moment. The growth hormone releasing basically tells the pituitary to release growth hormone. Corticotropin tells it to release this ACTH, which stimulates the adrenals. And somatostatin inhibits the growth hormone. So that's the only one where we have two different hormones from the hypothalamus to regulate whether it goes up or down. The pituitary produces TSH for the thyroid, FSH and LH that stimulate the ovaries, follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, follicle-stimulating hormone stimulates the actual growth and maturation of the follicle, being the egg follicle that's produced in the ovaries. And then luteinizing hormone actually stimulates the release of the egg. And then ACTH stimulates the adrenals. Prolactin is a hormone on its own, prolactin, which stimulates milk production. Growth hormone is a hormone on its own that does its own thing, which we've talked about a lot before, which stimulates growth and repair and helps to support fat burning and lean mass storage. And then there's this melanocyte-stimulating hormone, which is melanocytes are actually the pigment in your skin. That's one of the little-known functions of the anterior lobe of the pituitary. And then the posterior lobe of the pituitary produces vasopressin, which affects blood pressure, and oxytocin, which is the love hormone, the cuddle hormone. I had a whole radio show on that where we talked about oxytocin. And in addition to that being related to milk letdown and uterine contractions during birth, it's also related to lots of other things in the body, and lots of research is showing that it can help kids with autistic kind of kids, autistic spectrum disorder, and it can help a whole host of other things. I was just talking to a colleague the other day who's been researching it. She's having amazing results with people finding that they are oxytocin deficient and then really stimulating things to go. Help stimulate sex drive too. So those are the hormones that are controlled. That's the brain control of reproduction. So let's just review real quickly. The ones that we're going to be talking about today are the gonadotropin-releasing hormones, GnRH. And then from the pituitary, we're looking at FSH and LH. We're not going to look at prolactin today. We're not going to look at the others. We're going to mainly focus on these guys because these are the ones that you're going to be testing, and these are the ones that are easy to test. And there's actually oxytocin is now being tested by one of the labs I'm going to show you, Meridian Valley, that does a 24-hour comprehensive steroid. They just added oxytocin and melatonin to it. So it's really comprehensive, super comprehensive, very cool. So let's start with estrogen. Estrogen, we think about estrogen, you say, oh, estrogen. Everybody thinks estrogen is one molecule. It's one hormone. And actually, it's a whole family of hormones. There's the main three, E1, E2, E3, which are estradiol, E1, estrone, E2, and estriol, E3. Okay? And then from there, they get metabolized to 2-hydroxyestradiol. That's putting a hydroxyl group, OH, onto two of those, actually, or at the two position. And then it goes down to 2-hydroxymethoxy. And when we look at the labs, we're going to look at ratios between these because some of these are carcinogenic and some of these are protective. Okay, so the 4s are the bad guys and the 2s and the 16s have other functions, and I'm not going to just label them bad or good. The ratio has to be in order. If their ratio gets too skewed in one direction or the other, you can be at risk for either bone loss or you can be at risk for breast cancer. So it's not like something where you want the levels to get as low as possible. We want those ratios to be just right because too much in either direction is a problem. We don't want to have breast cancer risk or bone loss risk. We want to be right in the middle. And this will make sense. I'm just giving you an overview right now. It'll make sense when we look at the pathways and when we look at the tests and when we review some. And I do want to let you know that this is not like easy testing. Like when we looked at the lipids panels, those are easy tests. After you do 2 or 3 or 4 of them, you get it. They're really easy ones. And when we go through cases on our final presentation, you'll get those. You'll be able to do those in your sleep after a while. The adrenals, they're not that hard either. Once you've gotten a bunch of them under your belt, 10, 20, 30 of them, you really get good. You really go, okay, get this, you know, and then you see one that's weird and you have to think about it some more. But these are complicated. I first started doing these about 3 years ago. And Meridian Valley, where I do most of my testing for the 24-hour urine tests, which we'll talk about, they offer a consultation to practitioners. So if I run a test, I call them up and I can get up to a half an hour with one of their practitioners to go over that with me and help me to understand what's going on and help me to create protocols. Well, the first time I went, look, I've never done one of these before. You know, help. What does this all mean? And when you see the report, you're going to go, gag, I don't know how to do this. And I did it. I got some good results. The next one came in. I'm like, okay, I know this means that, but what does this mean? This is different. So I, you know, every time I run them, even now, I've run many of them, dozens and dozens of them, but I still call them up because I learn a little bit of something new. So I think of it as my educational investment. So it's really a great thing to do. I believe that you can have that same test done through Life Extensions and they will give you a little bit of a consult, but they don't know anywhere near as much as the people at the Meridian Valley Lab, because those guys have been trained by Jonathan Wright. It was like he's written books on it. He's been studying bioidentical hormones and the hormone metabolism for decades. So this is the overview of estrogen metabolism. Will you get this and remember this? No. Can I do this? If somebody said, draw this out, can I do it? No. I have to look at the picture. But I know what I'm looking at when I look at the labs now, and I know which ones are good and which ones are not, and what the ratios, and I still have to look up what the ratios are. So don't feel overwhelmed if you're going, oh my God, I'll never get this. It will take practice, 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 practice. And today I want to present it to you. I want to share with you what all the different components are, and we'll go through as many of the sample reports as we can. But what I've uploaded for you is some interpretation guides. Actually, I didn't upload those for you yet because those were in weird formats and I was going to show you them on the screen, and I've downloaded the picture, but I have to organize them. So I'm going to organize a little interpretive guide from the stuff that's on the website. It's stuff you can get by going to the Meridian Valley website, but it's hard on there to find stuff. You have to really dig, and then you have to know what you're looking for. So I'm going to do that for you. I'm going to create an interpretation guide for the 24-hour urine test. And then for the other test, which we're going to talk about, which is the saliva test for diagnostics and other labs do. So it's a salivary hormone test that they already give you interpretation guides, which are really cool. Without further ado, E1 is estrone. E1 is estrone. Estrone is secreted by your ovaries, but it's also secreted by your adrenal cortex. And one of the reasons that people have difficulties in going through menopause is that when the ovaries shut down and don't produce the estrogens anymore, the adrenals are producing this low level that should prevent you from having the hot flashes and the irritability and the mood swings. But when you've lived a stressful life and your adrenals are burned out, they're not doing it anymore. When you're in what we described as the pregnenolone steel, where all the precursor molecule is being thwarted down towards cortisol, you're not making enough of those, you don't have the ability to do that anymore. Okay? So the amounts of estrone you want, the ideal ratio is 1:2 with estradiol. Okay? Estrone 1 part to 2 parts estradiol. This is the strongest estrogen. It is also the only form that's naturally present in any quantity in postmenopausal women. And that's why they nickname it the old lady estrogen. But that also is what makes women, in, as they get older, to be more prone to breast cancer. Because this is not the protective form. And there's ways to protect it, which are beyond the scope of this analysis thing. And we're going to go over those in a lot more detail. We'll go through that in all kinds of detail on how you protect these. But right now we're looking at how do you figure out what's going on. As women age, the production of this declines and it's imbalanced, right? So as women age, the estradiol goes down. So that ratio of 1 part estrone to 2 parts estradiol get skewed in the favor of estrone, and that's when we're more prone to breast cancer. So it's really important to keep those ratios up, and really important to understand those ratios, especially if you're working with somebody who has had breast cancer or has breast cancer in the family and is nervous about it. Really looking at these ratios and then manipulating these ratios is where you want to be. Okay? Some people are afraid, they're like, their estrogens are off and they're afraid to take any kind of bioidentical hormones. But if you do this test, you can figure out, well, this person needs estriol, which is what Jonathan Wright calls the forgotten estrogen. And that's the protective one. Or you may need to do things to stimulate the E2 receptors, the beta receptors on estrogen, for estrogen, which are protective. So there's all kinds of things to do that we'll go into in a lot more detail. And also the balance with progesterone is protective. So just getting back to this, E1, estrone, the strongest estrogen, the most proliferative estrogen, the one that will predispose people to more cancer risk, breast cancer risk in particular, okay? The problem here is that, and why you have to be really careful in supplementing people with testosterone and DHEA in large amounts in women, is because, especially, I mean, in premenopausal, because the testosterone, if you supplement them with testosterone, it can be converted into estrone. And you'll see that when I show you the pathway. So the one thing that's so important that we all know how to do that is not really talked about as much in conventional medicine is you can prevent that conversion of the testosterone into estrogen by adding a lot of cruciferous vegetables. And there's supplements you can use like DIM and I3C. And those kinds of things are extracted from cruciferous vegetables, and they're very protective. And the reason that they're protective is, part of the reason is they prevent the conversion of the testosterone into estrone. So E1 is the one that's the high-risk one. You don't want to be supplementing people with estrone unless you really see that the balance is way off. And we'll see how the Meridian Valley test will show us the balance. So E2 is estradiol. Estradiol is responsible for breast enlargement, body shape, the fat distribution that women get, that men don't get, which is around the hips and around the breasts. It helps with mental health. So when people are complaining about irritability and crankiness and depression going into menopause, it may be that they have an E2, an estradiol deficiency. Either that or the ratio's off. They may have just the right amount of estradiol, but too much estrone. And when the ratio is off, you get the same symptoms as you would of a deficiency. The estradiol controls bone loss. So that's why as women age, they're more prone to it if the levels of these hormones are dropping, and especially if the ratio of the estrone and the estradiol is off. It can help improve memory and sleep. So a lot of women find that when they go on bioidentical hormones matched properly to their metabolism, then they sleep better. And they get better memory. When estradiol is balanced with progesterone and testosterone, when it's balanced, it can be protective. It's all about balance in this system. It's all about balance. So, you know, and the other thing that we like as women when we're younger and kind of lose as we get older because of this imbalance is the skin. It keeps your skin moist and soft, and it keeps your hair shiny. So it's definitely something that we need. And estrogen's gotten a bad rap as, you know, bad estrogen causes cancer. We have to be careful. We have to lower our levels of estrogen. Should never take it. But it's creating balance. Okay, creating balance. And then estriol, as Jonathan Wright calls it, the forgotten estrogen, because it's not produced on its own. It doesn't have its own little production path that gets produced from either from estradiol or estrone. It's a metabolite. And I'll show you that back on the picture. Okay, so you've got estradiol, estrone, and then you get from the 16, which is the protective one, you get estriol. And from the estrone, the 2-estrone, you get methoxy. Okay, and then from the estradiol, it goes to 2-hydroxy, and then it can go down to 2-hydroxyestrone, which can go to the methoxy. And the methoxies are the protective ones. The problem is when these things get converted downstream to the estrone. You see, the estrone is the one that goes down to the 4, and that's the really dangerous one. And that the estrone can also go properly to estriol, but again, those cruciferous vegetables are really important, as well as iodine. Iodine helps to convert to the estriol. So you really have to make sure that your people are sufficient in iodine and sufficient in lots of cruciferous vegetables. And if they're not willing to sit down and eat their broccoli, you put them on DIM, diindolmethane, or I3C, indole 3-carbinol. Okay? So it's highly protective of your DNA blueprint, highly protective of expression of genes that are going to be beneficial for you. Protects your DNA from damage, which of course means protects you from cancer. Protects you from cancer because it protects your DNA. It helps to have a more mature state of breast glandular tissue, which is less susceptible to damage by radiation and chemicals. Okay, so you have to have the estrogen. So going back to the estrogen metabolism, I stuck in protective are the cruciferous vegetables. And soy has some flavonoids that will help to convert that. And then the toxins are going to cause you to do more conversion from the 16 to the 4, which is the carcinogenic one. This is the big picture. You're going to see your male and female hormones here. These are the steroid hormones. We go from cholesterol to pregnenolone. Pregnenolone, some people call it the mama hormone. I call it the grandma because it has so many descendants. And really, the estrogen and the testosterone are far removed from it. So I really call it the grandma. Progesterone, same thing. Progesterone gets converted from pregnenolone, and then it can go down to aldosterone or cortisol. The pregnenolone can then go to hydroxy, and it goes down to DHEA, which is the anti-stress hormone, as opposed to the stress hormone. And then that can get converted to the male hormones, androsterone, and then testosterone. And then testosterone can go to estradiol, to estrone, to estriol. So when you get too much of conversion, if you take too much of the testosterone, you get too much estradiol produced, too much estrone produced, and you can have problems. Not necessarily, because if it goes to estradiol but doesn't, you know, go down to the 16s because you have the indole 3 carbonyls and the cruciferous, you're in good shape. But you see, this is very complicated, but there's a lot of places where you can intervene with people, so it's really important to understand those ratios. So you see that if somebody just runs an estradiol test or an estrone test on lab, it's not giving you the picture. So what? We don't know. We need to know the ratios. We need to know the testosterone-estrogen ratios. We need to know the progesterone-estrogen ratios. We need to know the estradiol-estrone and estriol ratio. And I'll show you the calculation that they do on the Meridian Valley test. So let's take a quick look at progesterone. It's produced by your corpus luteum, which is after the body releases an egg to be fertilized or not. Once it gets released, what's left in the ovary is what's called the corpus luteum. And it says, okay, we're sending an egg down. We need to build up that lining. And progesterone builds up the uterine lining. Progesterone is really important in pregnancy. And low progesterone deficiency can be the cause of infertility and miscarriage. So the corpus luteum and the brain produce progesterone. And it's a direct descendant of pregnenolone. So if we've got that pregnenolone steal going on, where the pregnenolone is going down to cortisol, or the progesterone can get converted down through two steps into cortisol, then we have low progesterone. So when women are under a lot of stress, when they are in the fight-flight mode, achieving a pregnancy is going to be really challenging. You're going to have menstrual disorders. You're going to have an imbalance of estrogen, progesterone, and end up with things like PMS. Okay? So this is really important as you get into menopause. If you're low in progesterone, that can cause problems as well, right? The estrogen, progesterone, when you're estrogen dominant, it can create imbalances and put you at high risk because progesterone's protective. Progesterone is also protective of the breasts. It's disrupted by a lot of antiprogestins in the environment. A lot of your plastics and phthalates and things in the environment that are hormone disruptors disrupt progesterone. They inhibit the progesterone. They disrupt it. Progesterone is also depleted when you have nutrient insufficiencies, when you don't have enough B vitamins in particular, because B6 is really important for interconversions between hormones as well as neurotransmitters. So B6 deficiency is really, really something to be addressed when you're looking at people with hormone imbalances and neurological and mood disorders. Also, it's depleted by insufficiencies of diet. It can be helped by soy and fiber, the progesterone resistance is a thing that can happen. Remember we talked about insulin resistance and we talked about adrenaline resistance? Well, there's progesterone resistance. You can have this resistance for all hormones. Basically, what it means is that the receptors on the cells have been damaged or blocked so that the hormone cannot be picked up by the receptors. Another reason why just doing a blood test doesn't give you the full answer. You know, there's no really way to test for resistance other than symptoms of deficiency in the presence of adequate hormones. So if you do tests and you find out that there's plenty of the progesterone and people are having progesterone-like deficiencies, they may have progesterone resistance. And the things that disrupt those receptors are all the typical things. Stress, cortisol disrupts lots of receptors, lots of cellular receptors. A toxic environment, the phthalates, the plastics in the environment, they block those receptors. So you end up with lots of problems. Female, unlike the male, we have a pattern that we follow throughout a month. Male hormones are not cyclical. Female hormones are. And the way that it works is in the very beginning stage, the first 9 or 10 days of the cycle is called the follicular phase. And that's where the follicle is maturing. We've got FSH being secreted, stimulating the follicle to start to mature and grow. Then we hit the peak, which is the ovulation phase, where the estrogen suddenly gets higher on the stimulation of LH. And then it stimulates the follicle to be produced, the ovulation. Ovulation, the follicle is released from the egg. So in the follicular phase, that follicle is growing in the presence of FSH, not low progesterone, low estradiol. So right at ovulation, we get a peak, and it's usually within 2-3 days, and you can measure it by temperature. You can measure it from those little ovulation kits and know when the ovulation is about to happen. As soon as the egg is released, the estrogen levels drop. But the progesterone levels start to come up. And that's the luteal phase. The luteal phase is where we have high progesterone and we end up with low estradiol. Okay, you can see the progesterone is low all the way through about day 14 and then it comes up. Which is why when you put somebody on progesterone, a progesterone cream, and they're in premenopause where they're having cycles, you want to give the hormones properly, right? Properly. The progesterone should only be given starting at around day 12 so that it comes up. It brings it up properly. And then the progesterone stays high for a while and then it comes on down. This is a picture from a report that is done through one of those tests where they do this whole cycle. We'll talk more about the test in a little bit. Okay, that's done by Diagnostics or Great Smoky, well, Genova or Metametrics. They have those kits where women will be collecting saliva at a certain ritual of days, like day 2, day 5, day 10, and then they do it much more frequently at around the ovulation and in the later part, but they test it about 10 or 12 times throughout the cycle. So that's what the cycle looks like. Here's more of a typical female hormone cycle. So follicle stimulating hormone, and then luteinizing hormone. But this basically shows you the cycle. The follicle is maturing on the second picture. It gets bigger. It gets released right when we have that peak in estrogen and LH peaks. And then the estrogen peaks and comes down. And then here's what estrogen does. But basically, the LH is what surges, which causes the estrogen to come down a little bit, the progesterone to come up a little bit, but your progesterone, your estrogen still will be reasonably, it's not real high, but it's still going to be up. It's not at the very, very baseline as it is at the beginning of the follicular phase. Okay, and you can measure this, and you can get graphs of this, and you can compare your person to the norm, to what it should be, and say, oh my goodness, this person's peaking in progesterone at day 6. There's nothing there for it to hold, no wonder, and then it's coming down. No wonder they can't hold a pregnancy or get pregnant, right? And you can really analyze things here. The ratio here, estrogen and progesterone in the luteal phase, more progesterone than estrogen. And if you look at somebody and they're estrogen dominant in that phase, again, they're going to have difficulties with their menstrual cycles. They may have difficulty conceiving, and if they do conceive, holding that pregnancy. So this is a more detailed picture of the estrogen metabolism in terms of them giving you the various things that interfere and enhance. So estrone gets produced to 4-hydroxy. If you have low magnesium, it enhances that conversion. And remember, 4-hydroxyestrone is the carcinogenic one. So if you have low magnesium, you've got to make sure people have plenty of magnesium. Eating lots of green leafy vegetables and taking a magnesium supplement if need be, that gets converted down to the 4-hydroxy, and that's not good. Okay. So also like toxins in the environment and lack of cruciferous vegetables too. But the conversion of estrone, it gets put down to the 2-hydroxy, which then can get turned down to the methoxy. If you have DIM, which is the cruciferous vegetables. So cruciferous vegetables and their metabolites, the DIM and the I3C, exercise, flax, soy, omega-3s, and addition of progesterone. And that helps to produce the better, the good metabolites. It's inhibited by pesticides, alcohol, high-fat diet. So that's where it's inhibited. So when you inhibit the conversion from estrone down to 2-hydroxy by pesticides, alcohol, high-fat diet, or low magnesium, you end up with more 4-hydroxyestrone. The estrone going down to the 16, things like obesity, hypothyroid, pesticides, and a drug called cimetidine, which is, I think it's a stomach drug. The 16 getting produced into estriol is iodine. Remember I said iodine is really important? It's really important to have the cruciferous vegetables and the iodine and magnesium to maintain healthy estrogen metabolism. Very important. So what I want to do is switch to the males. We'll switch to males, and then what we'll do from there is we'll go into the testing. I really feel like it's important for you to understand this before we go into the testing, or you'll be completely lost. You might already feel like you're completely lost, because like I said, it's complicated. Okay? So it takes a while. It takes practice. It takes looking at it over and over. And once you get it, if you don't look at it for a while, like I haven't done one of these tests in about 2 months. So I'm a little rusty. So it's a good idea. The more often you can do these tests, the better you are. Or if you're not running them on your own, we should be looking at the samples. And Meridian provides a number of samples on their site, and I've given you some of those. So DHA, we talked about when we talked about adrenals. It's produced in the male, and it's also an anti-stress hormone produced by the adrenals. But it's produced in both males and females. And as we looked at in the picture, it's a precursor for both males and females. DHEA can be converted to testosterone, which can be converted to estrogen. Androstenedione. I took a long time to be able to say that. Androstenedione. It's a weak male hormone. It's a precursor to progesterone and to the male and female hormones. So it's a precursor. It's weak. It's not going to have specific effects on your system, on the male attributes. Just weak. But its real role is to be there to be converted into this testosterone and DHT. Testosterone is the main testicular androgen. It's the main hormone produced in the testes. And also, like I said, gets produced in the adrenals as well in small amounts. It's the precursor to dihydroxytestosterone. Dihydroxy is very, very potent. And it's made from testosterone. And it can even be made in the prostate and skin, in addition to the adrenals and testes. So this can be made in a lot of places. Now, it has really good attributes in that it's responsible for a lot of the specific male sex characteristics. However, too much of it can stimulate hypertrophy. Too much of it can stimulate male pattern baldness. So we'll look at that when we look at the test. And there's a ratio that's used on the Meridian Valley 24-hour test that gives us the ratio of the DHT and testosterone and the other metabolites, which gives us the alpha reductase, the 5-alpha reductase ratio. So just again, I keep coming back to this chart, so we keep reviewing it. We have the bad guy, quote unquote, cholesterol that gets converted to all these things that we need. So it's really not the bad guy. The bad guy is when we don't have enough of our vitamins, when we're eating a processed food diet, when we're eating poor fats, when we're under stress that inhibits the cholesterol from being converted down to pregnenolone. I've seen a lot of people with high cholesterol and low sex hormones. Vitamin B5 is critical for that, as well as decreasing stress, because cortisol will inhibit it. So it's like this vicious cycle. You use all your pregnenolone to make cortisol, and then it inhibits the conversion of cholesterol, which maybe you have plenty of, into pregnenolone. And so you're stuck in this cycle. And the only thing you can do is get the cortisol levels calmed down and get the system working again and take the stress out. So we have progesterone, which comes right from pregnenolone, but progesterone can either go down to aldosterone or down to cortisol. Cortisone at the bottom is a storage form of cortisol, and we'll show you when we look at the Meridian Valley test how that works, how the cortisone ratio with cortisol and the different metabolites let you know what is your active stress level now, but what are your reserves? So if you see somebody on that test with high levels of cortisol and the cortisol metabolites and low levels of cortisone, you know that this person has been under stress for a long time. They're currently producing plenty of cortisol, but it's just a matter of time before they burn out. And I actually saw that happen. We warned them and said, okay, you've got to, these are the things you need to do. These are the things you need to do to protect it. And you know, not taking it so seriously and continuing to do some of the bad habits, like, you know, watching wild movies before bed and not going to bed on time and eating right before bed and just getting pissed off at every little thing, he ended up going into that depletion. And it affects testosterone, which affects sex drive, which affects motivation and drive. You know, sometimes we want to jump right into, let's just replace these hormones when they're out of balance, but a lot of times it really needs to be working on the stress. And yes, I'm totally for replacing those hormones when need be to help protect, but I'm also for not doing that without telling the person about how to get the adrenals under control and get the stress under control. Because you're doing a person a disservice if you do this test and you say, oh, you need testosterone and you need estrone and estradiol and estriol and progesterone, and we're going to give you these ratios, and you don't talk to them about cortisol. You don't talk about stress. And remember, their stresses are related to not just mental and emotional stress. It's dietary stress. So if they're eating gluten, if they're eating foods that are that they're allergic to, if they're eating inflammatory foods, if they're eating poor fats, that's a stress. It doesn't have to be somebody who gets, you know, bent out of shape at every last thing. They may seem like a calm person, but they're eating foods, or they have an infection somewhere, or they have an old trauma, they have inflammation, they have an autoimmune disease. So it's really important in looking at this test that we don't get lured into the, oh, we'll just go to, you know, give people hormone replacement. And even if you're not an MD, you can still recommend hormone replacement for people, because there's over-the-counter DHEA, there's over-the-counter stuff from Bezuecan that has better estrogen and progesterone in them. So you can do it. Testosterone's the one I can't find, except that pine pollen extract has a little bit of testosterone in it and can be used. But that's another story. We'll talk about that more when we do our full, you know, protocols and everything seminar. So here's the male hormone flow chart. So if we look back at the full hormone flow chart, we've got DHEA going down to androsterone, then going down to androstenedione, and they both convert to testosterone. Now, we don't have that testosterone metabolism, so let's look at that a little bit more closely here. So basically, the shortcut is progesterone eventually gets down to androstenedione, which goes to testosterone, which goes to DHT. So it's not that much more complicated, but when we look at the Meridian Valley, we'll see a few other metabolites. Okay, so DHT, dihydroxytestosterone. Some people supplement with that. I think it's dangerous to do that because you can easily get into excess, which causes problems, you know, like male pattern baldness, like proliferation, prostate cancer, things like that. You think you were confused. I just put this in for grins because the other pathways show it a little bit neater. This is the Meridian Valley one. And this is what they give you when you do the test and some of these things they test. So you can see that when you go from pregnenolone to DHEA down to the androstenedione. You got other things that go into it, eicosanolone. There's all these other places. You go to testosterone. It goes to two different kinds of DHT, and it's mind-boggling, right? We already looked at the estrogen part of it, but it's mind-boggling. I didn't have a good chart. I'll have to put together a good chart, a comprehensive one with the little boxes on the testosterone. And then the cortisol, it's not just that. It goes down to tetrahydra, cortisol, cortisone. It's all these different things that go downstream. So someday when you really get it, you'll be able to look at this chart and know, you know, look at a lab and know exactly where the thing is. But I always keep these charts handy when I'm looking at the lab. So I go, oh, what? Where does that come from? Oh, yeah, that comes from there. Oh, yeah, that comes from there. So please do that. Use this chart.